they used to today's Teisho is case 10 in the Hikigan Roku, the Pien Lu, the Blue Rock Collection. Case 10 is entitled Bokushu's Empty-Headed Fool. Ango's introduction. Yes is yes, no is no. In the Dharma battle, each stands on his own ground. Therefore, it is said, when one's activity is upward, even Shakyamuni, Maitreya, Manjushri, Samantabhadra, the thousand holy ones, and the religious teachers of the whole world become spiritless and silent. When one's activity is downward, even maggots, gnats, and all creatures become brilliantly illuminating and as independent as a 10,000-foot cliff. However, how is it when one's activity is neither upward nor downward? If there is any rule, rely on the rule. If there is no rule, follow a precedent. See the following. Main subject. Bokushu asked a monk, "Where are you from?" The monk gave a katsu shout. Bokushu said again, "This old monk is shouted down by you." The monk shouted again. Bokushu said, "What about the third and fourth shouts?" The monk stayed silent. Bokushu hit the monk and said, "You empty-headed fool." Secho's verse. Two shouts, three shouts. The knowing one knows well. If going hell-bent, both are blind. Who is blind? Fetch him. Expose him to the world. I want to thank everybody for coming here this morning. You know, you can listen to these talks. They're recorded and they're on our website. You could put them on a recording device and listen to them as you drive to work or something like that. And if you enjoy doing that, I think that's great. But you know, it's a very different experience to come here in the morning and sit and meditate with other people and then listen to the talk, or if you like, just go to sleep during the talk. There's a different kind of texture to the experience, and I hope you had a good sit this morning. I actually sit by myself quite a lot. But sitting with other people is really extraordinary, I think. It makes a huge difference in the quality of my own practice. And I hope it has that effect on you. Generally speaking, people sit much more deeply when they practice with other people. It's really wonderful. There's something about that collective energy that makes a big difference. You know, we're all on the path to awakening, and it helps sometimes to be practicing with other people. For many years, I've sat across from Yen, and his sitting is so beautiful to see. It's so excellent. It's quite inspiring, and even though you might think that. Since I've been doing this for 35 years, I don't have any pain in my legs. Sometimes I do. And by the time I'm up to the fifth sit without a break, I might feel like moving. And then I look over at Yen and he looks so still. He's sitting like a rock. And I think, well, I mustn't move because Yen is not moving. And who knows, maybe Yen peeks out of his eye and looks at me and thinks, "I'd like to move, but I won't move because Kurt is not moving and he looks so still." So we both help each other to sit more deeply, yeah? And of course, I've been sitting with Yen for many, many years, and it's a great, great joy, a great privilege. So that kind of mutual reinforcement is worth a lot. And even though it's not always easy to get up on a Saturday morning and come here, I think you will find your sitting is deeper. And I have to tell you that I had a number of things going on in my life that are difficult, you know. Even though it's summer and I'm a teacher, you would think I don't have anything to do, but actually I'm quite busy, you know. And lots going on in my personal life and my professional life. For example, you know, the state of New Jersey is in a real budget crisis, and it's affecting the public universities. So there's a lot of tension, you know, when things get difficult, people don't always pull together and cooperate. Sometimes they start fighting. People start fighting. Everybody fears the loss of his special world, you know? And I understand that fear. You know, people might work for 10 years or 20 years building something, and in a budget crisis like this, the dean might have to say this has to be cut in half or this has to be cut. And many years of work have just gone like that, you know. And that can cause people a lot of distress. And sometimes people don't take out their distress, you know, in the most humane way, you know. So they might be impolite to somebody they work with. They might, you know, I'm sure you've seen people behave in ways that are not helpful, you know. Sometimes when people are under pressure, it can bring out some of their character flaws. Yeah. And I see this at work, you know, some people can get to be, can be very aggressive when they're threatened. And also some people can be very, can get very depressed, very unhappy. And, you know, I see this sometimes, you know, too. So anyway, I'm struggling with things like that at my workplace and some other problems as well. Also in my home, I'm struggling, you know. For a number of years now, my 90-year-old father-in-law has come to live with us. And, you know, he's a very nice guy. He, I've talked about him in some of my Tay shows. You know, he is actually a very nice man, and we get along very well. But nevertheless, you know, caring for somebody who's 90 years old is actually very stressful. He requires constant attention, you know. And when my wife and I are not in the home, we have to hire somebody to come and watch him. You know, his behavior is not always trustworthy, you know. Sometimes he will not take his pills, and he'll throw them in the wastebasket or something like that. And when he doesn't do that, he begins to have some symptoms of, like, emotional imbalance, you know. I told you that one time he went naked outside. You might not have been there, but this winter, a neighbor woke us up and said, isn't that your father-in-law out on the street? And he was out there naked, waiting for us to pick him up and take him somewhere. So he takes medicines that help to stabilize his mind. But, you know, all the same, caring for this person is a challenge. Just the other day, we finally got out of the house, and we went over to Lambertville to get a break. You know, I had been working very hard, and my wife had been, you know, caring for her father, and it's really draining. So basically, we both went over to Lambertville, and we wanted to have a little break. You know, finally, you know, stop working, just sit down and you know, if you know the town of Lambertville, it's very beautiful. You know, there are canals along the river, and you can walk down the canals, and the trees are very beautiful. And it was just a glorious day anyway. And I began to feel very good, really more relaxed. But I know that my wife was still worried about her father, you know, because we're an hour and a half away, and he was by himself, and she's terrified that he's going to fall again, and nobody will be there, and then she'll have tremendous guilt. And so it's like she can never rest. She can never just relax, because there's a part of her mind that's constantly worried, you know. And I suppose we're all like that. You know, we have, you know, I guess there's probably a part of my mind that's worried about certain things at work. You know, so even if you're, if it's a nice sunny day and you're by the canal and you're sitting, and we went to the canal and I bought my wife a margarita. I myself don't drink, but she had two margaritas. And I think she could have had three, you know. She was pretty tense, you know. So after two margaritas, she was sort of like normal, you know, so the tension was down a little bit. But, you know, the point is you can have all the ingredients for a perfect day. You know, it's a beautiful sunny day, beautiful location, a margarita, and still there's that, it's like under the surface there's a kind of tension. You know, it's like it's there all the time. And this is quite common, you know, quite common. People live with this for years and years and years, this kind of tension, right? Some of our problems are solvable, you know, through actions we take. So it's possible that we can, you know, if we're in a very unhappy job situation, we can change our job, you know. But sometimes there are situations you can't change, you know. So, you know, my father-in-law basically was not a good manager of his money, you know. So he had a lot of money in the stock market when it fell in 2008, and he lost a lot of his savings. He's wasted a lot of money in his life too, and so he's doesn't have much left, you know. So we really had to sort of take him in, you know. And as I say, I like him very much, but it creates constant stress, probably for both of us, you know, more directly for my wife, but also for me. It's a strange thing, you know. You know, like most people in the modern world, I didn't grow up with my grandparents, you know. They weren't living in the same house. I didn't really see old age up close as a child, you know. But as an adult, seeing old age up close, it has an impact on you, you know. I mean, if you're young, if you're 20 right now, it just doesn't really have much resonance. But, you know, I come downstairs every day, and my father-in-law is in the dining room next to the kitchen. So when I'm going to have my breakfast, he's sleeping in there. And I always look to see if he's still alive. I mean, it's true. I get up, I come downstairs, I look and see if his chest is moving, you know. And it takes him forever to get up. You know, it's like, he gets up and sometimes he's achy and he's got a lot of pain, and it takes him forever to get up and get dressed, and I make his breakfast for him and get him some tea. And sometimes he barely gets through his breakfast and he falls asleep in his chair, you know. So I'm not trying to paint a bleak picture, but even though he's a nice guy, and even though he has all his marbles, you know, most of the time, except when he's running around naked in the winter, you know, it's like a constant, you know, this constant vigilance is wearing, and there are other things like this too, you know, I know that my father had a difficult job, And he used to come home and have many martinis every night. And I think he was under a lot of stress, you know, and didn't really know how to get rid of it, you know. Some people jog, you know, jogging is very good for stress. You know, actually a drink once in a while is not a bad idea, you know. Apparently it helps. But even with a drink and even with a jog, sometimes you'll notice that there's still like this residue of tension, yeah? And this is actually quite, I think tension is quite destructive, you know. Scientists say that it's not good for your system, actually, to be tense all the time, to be nervous. It's like you're waiting for something to hit you, you know, all the time. And it's it creates like a heart disease, you know. Apparently your arteries can be clogged by stress, and I often think that some stress, as I say, is situational. You know, it comes out of a situation that you can't change, and sometimes it's produced by a sense of like foreboding, right? Like you're waiting for something bad to happen. So my wife is always waiting to hear that my father has fallen down, and I think some part of her mind, she's very worried that he's going to die, even though it's guaranteed that he's going to die. Some of the people I work with, you know, are very worried about budget cuts affecting their jobs or their salaries, and so they go to work every day with a kind of sense underneath it all, there's a little sense of foreboding or worry, right? And this is like a stress that's under the surface, under the current, under the surface. And then there's other stresses too that come from, they're not really like situational, they have to do with our sort of like mental habits. This is like, I mean, how we respond to stressful situations is also part of our array of mental habits, you know. So I noticed that some people are able to adapt very well to stress, and some people aren't. So my neighbors are two really nice gay guys, John and Patrick, and John he seems like a very capable person. He's a rather handsome 60-year-old man. He works in real estate in New York City. And he and his partner Patrick used to live in the city